Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burke, joined as always by the Joe Morgan to my John Miller, Jason Ruggiero.
I don't know what's worse, being Joe Morgan or being John Miller. At least I'm a Hall of Famer.
Think about it.
At least I'm a Hall of Famer.
Oh, but I got those silky vocals that everybody misses on Sunday Night Baseball.
You're also going bald.
Which is a very true-to-life depiction of me. That's very valid. Maybe that was a real subconscious thing I did there. So today, before we get started, I wanted to bring this up because I thought it was a really neat conversation and it might make for an interesting topic of discussion amongst our listeners. On MLB Network on January 29th, they had Tom Verducci on, and he stated that one of the things that he would change to baseball if he could would be taking the All-Star game to somewhere where it isn't typically played. So somewhere where there's lots of places that don't get Major League Baseball. So he mentioned one of the places that doesn't get a lot of Major League Baseball action, Mount Rushmore in South Dakota. Or, setting up a field at the base of Mount Rushmore, or like going to the Field of Dreams field in Iowa and playing a game there. And I thought that was a really, really cool concept. I really like that. I mean, I don't know the logistics of how you get like 60,000 stadium seats somewhere, but I'm sure, you know, baseball's got enough money they could figure out how to do it. So if that were something that baseball decided to pursue, Jason, what non-traditional location would you enjoy watching a game at?
None.
None. Listen to this poopy pants over here. Hey, Debbie Downer, come on.
I think it's a ridiculous idea. Try to not climb up on my soapbox. We're only like 4 minutes in.
It's too soon for the soapbox.
Too soon. People too just soon. Turn it off. Go ahead, say your piece.
Okay, well, this is what I wanted to bring up. Think about what the NHL does with that, what's that game that they do outside every year, the Winter Classic or whatever they call it?
Yeah.
I don't watch it. It's a communist sport, but I know they do it. So why couldn't baseball do something neat like that where they, because you know it would bring fans in. Holy geez. I mean, if you were to tell fans we're going to go play a game at Mount Rushmore, they would travel from everywhere to go get tickets for it. It would be crazy.
I disagree.
You disagree?
The draw of the Winter Classic is that it's outside. That's what makes it unique.
You don't think playing a baseball game at the foot of Mount Rushmore would be unique?
Yeah.
That would be the greatest thing ever.
It'd be unique in a circus type way.
What if Barry Bonds were still playing and he could hit a home run off George Washington's face?
I'll tell you what. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the NFL Pro Bowl is something you want to model yourself after? Because that's the road this is going down.
Yeah, very valid point. Very valid point there. Yeah. I don't know. I like the idea. I thought it was a neat idea. And I thought it was an interesting way to possibly bring baseball. You know, baseball's never going to do that because there's no way that the owners would ever let them you know, lose all that revenue. But yeah, just in theory, I think it's kind of neat.
Yeah.
No, not for you, huh? Does nothing for you.
Pretty soon we're going to have... I'm trying to think of two goofballs to choose up sides. To take the place of Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders in this analogy.
Brandon Phillips and someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
That dude BP.
Yeah, Brandon Phillips and... No, it'd just be goofier than that. It'll be like Brandon Phillips and Richard Sherman get to choose up sides.
Who was the guy that started the hot foot for the Mets? That guy? I'd let that guy pick teams. I bet he's a fun guy.
See this?
What the hell? I can't think of that guy's name. What was that guy's name who started lighting people's shoes on fire for the Mets?
I can't.
That was the he played for the 86 Mets, didn't he? The year that they won that World Series, I think. He was like a real, I mean, he's a no-name guy, obviously, because no one can remember his name, but look up the guy who invented the hot foot.
Yeah, I'm trying to see.
I think he'd be good to have on one side. Who would be another really good?
You know, You know what comes up when you put in hot footing Mets?
I don't know what.
Jeff Wilpon says only three or four Mets on solid footing.
Classic Mets Google.
Oh, man.
Can't even get the real hot foot to come up for the Mets. That's how awful they are.
Hold on. It comes up in Roger McDowell's Wikipedia page.
Mm.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't even know.
Something else?
It devolved quickly from where we were talking. Oh, because that's the guy who I would have teams. The guy who invented the hot foot for the Mets.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe, I don't know,
it's Roger McDowell.
Was it Roger McDowell? He was the guy that invented the hot foot?
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, he was a prankster who would light firecrackers in the dugout and also skillfully wrap a wad of chewing gum around a cigarette, then secretly place the contraption on the heels of teammates' cleats, known as the hot foot.
McDowell was he on the 86 Mets when they won the World Series?
Yeah.
Okay.
He also apparently during a nationally televised game was filmed with his uniform on upside down and his pants over his head with his shoes on his hands.
Maybe we should just let the 86 Mets pick the teams. They're like the craziest group of people that have ever been collected.
He also took part in an on-field mariachi band and wore earrings in the clubhouse to protest to protest Marge Schott's banning of earrings.
Yeah, those would be some good guys. Get him and Lenny Dykstra together to pick some teams.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right, so we done with this. Anything else you want to? Any other points you want to bring up on our opening?
No.
This is usually the point where I go, all right, that's enough. Now we need to get to the real stuff.
Yeah, we're at that point.
All right, that's enough. We need to get to the real stuff. So on today's show, we're going to talk a little bit of Tribe, what's been going on in their offseason. Kind of actually a busy offseason for Cleveland. We're going to then talk about the Pirates, what's been going on in their offseason. Kind of a quiet offseason for the Pirates. So let's kick things off with the Cleveland Indians today, Jason. Jason, what's been going on with the Indians offseason?
Well, you know, the most pressing thing, I guess, is as I titled it in the article I posted on the site today, the arbitration situation.
That is some great alliteration with the arbitration situation.
Yeah. They still have no contract agreement with Justin Masterson, Michael Brantley, Vinny Pastano, or Josh Tomlin. And, of course, when we say no contract agreement, they're under club control. They're not going anywhere. They just haven't agreed on what exactly they will receive for compensation this year. We're past the point now where both sides filed numbers. For Tomlin, he filed, I think it was like eight. Yeah, he filed $975,000, and the Indians countered with $800,000. Pastano filed $1.45. The Indians countered $975,000. Now, to me, those two guys are the ones that don't make any sense to me, because Tomlin was hurt almost all last year, and Pastano was ineffective almost all last year.
Right.
So to me, I don't understand why they're putting their foot down, especially Tomlin. I mean, that difference is almost negligible, and he pitched two innings last year. Honestly, I think that Pastano is a little burned about being sent down last July to Columbus, and I just have the feeling that, you know, that upset him, and now he's going to drag his heels because he can. You know, it's like we talked about before we started recording. It's one of the few things the players have control over when they're still in arbitration, is deciding what exactly number they're going to settle on, and he's apparently just going to dig his heels in here and see what happens.
Just because he can.
Just because he can. I mean, it's probably a better idea for him to focus on getting back to the old Vinny Pastano rather than, you know, a couple $100,000. Because if he turns into the old Vinny Pastano again, a couple $100,000 is going to take care of itself.
Right.
But that's what he wants to do. So Masterson is still unsettled. He filed at, let me pull it up here. It's like 11, gotta find it here. 11.8 million, and the Indians filed at 8.05 million. This is his last year of arbitration, so this will be the last year they have control over him. Personally, this one, it seems like Masterson went a little high and the Indians went a little low.
Right.
The middle ground is $10 million, which is what everyone pretty much seems to agree he's worth, including MLB Trade Rumors, which has usually really strong arbitration projections. They project he should earn about $9.925 million, which is right about in the middle. So they broke off extension talks with him, so they're not discussing a long-term contract anymore. So it seems like now that we're focusing just on 1 year, I think we'll get a resolution to Masterson fairly quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's their ace. They need him. When you're talking about the difference between $9 million and say $11 million, you know, on a payroll of $77 million, it's not really that big of a deal.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, because this is Masterson's last year of his arbitration, correct? So
correct.
So he has right now that compensation pick attached to him. With if Cleveland offers him a qualifying offer at the end of the season and he declines it, then he has that comp pick attached to him, right?
Well, he would, right? Like the qualifying offer determination depends on season performance, I'm pretty sure. It's not just like everyone who's a free agent. Remember the old type A and type B free agents?
Right, yeah.
They did away with those. But it's, you know, certain players will qualify for this ability to be offered a qualifying offer by their team. Essentially, it's the new type A free agent. And, I mean, if Masterson did anything that he's done the last 4 years, he would fall into that. And they would be able to give him a qualifying offer, right? Which would give them a draft pick
to
sign somewhere else.
Right. So if Cleveland isn't looking to extend him.
Right.
And so let's say it comes to a point where Cleveland realizes, like, hey, this season, you know, we're not going to do whatever we thought we were going to do, and they want to trade him. The team that would receive him in a trade would not get that qualifying offer ability with him if he were traded during the season.
Right. If a player that would get a qualifying offer attached to them is traded mid-season or during the season, the new team and the old team both lose that compensation.
Yeah.
Nobody gets that.
So Cleveland, it sounds like, either just has to suck it up and hold on to him all season no matter what, or, you know, try and figure out what's going to happen before the season.
Right.
Because once the season starts, his trade value is, you know, basically nil without that qualifying offer ability.
Well, I don't know about nil, but I mean, it's going to take a hit. I mean, Masterson would love that.
Right. Yeah. To get that.
From
to
a
get that
contractual situation, to be rid of that qualifying offer, that would be the best thing that could happen to his future earning potential.
Right.
But the team that he's traded to would not like that. Right.
Right. Which that's what's going to kill his value, because, you know, nobody's going to want to trade for the guy to have him for half a season and then not be able to offer him that qualifying offer.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, you know. It will definitely affect his value. The only thing would be, you know, there's always teams that make stupid decisions at the trade deadline and are willing to sacrifice too much. Obviously, that if you were Antonetti and you were going to trade Masterson, those would be the guys you'd want to be talking to.
Yeah.
But right. I mean, I think personally that I don't think they can trade him. I think, you know, they've had so many salary dumps and trade deadline dumps and rebuilding periods that their fans are so fed up. And I think if they traded him, any of the goodwill that they got themselves by having a competitive team last year, by signing two big money free agents last year, I think it's just gone right out the window. I mean, the casual fan doesn't care about the business side of baseball at all. They care that their team keeps trading their best player.
Right. Yeah.
And honestly, I think they are, you know, in a position where they can make the playoffs again. And if you can make the playoffs, as we've said a million times, all you got to do is get hot at the right time. And you have a chance to win it all. And if you're in that position, I think you have to keep him and just give him the qualifying offer and hope his value tanks. And that maybe you have a chance to bring him back, you know?
Yeah.
The only thing is, I think Masterson might be one of those pitchers that, like, if he has another good year, I mean, his ERA numbers are often inconsistent because he has a little bit higher walk rate than what you would like, but his K rate numbers are almost to an elite level.
Right.
So if he has another really good year like last year, he's the kind of guy that the big money teams, I don't think, will hesitate to give up their draft pick and their bonus pool money to sign.
Yeah. So we have Pestano and Tomlin and Masterson. And who is our fourth player that we still have that needs addressed in Cleveland?
The last one is Michael Brantley, and he's the one that honestly is surprising to me. He filed at $3.8 million, and the Indians countered with $2.7 million. MLB Trade Rumors projects he's worth $3.7 million, and I agree with that. I think Brantley is well within his value by submitting $3.8 million. I think the Indians are lowballing him a little there.
Yeah, a million, that's a pretty big difference there.
Right, when you're only making, you know, three or two. And this is his first year of arbitration, so this is his big jump, you know, where he's going to go from, I don't know, 500,000 or 800,000, whatever it was, up. And, of course, this year is going to set up his arbitration salaries for the next 2 years.
Right. So,
it's in Brantley's interest to get as much as he can. Now, I hope that the reason they are not settling is that they're trying to work on an extension with him. There's been rumors that they were talking about it last year, and he's one of the guys that always gets mentioned. And I would like them to sign Brantley to an extension. I think it'd be really, really interesting to see what those numbers would look like, because while he's really a very consistent player, he lacks some of those sexy corner outfielder numbers, namely power.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling that's kind of the card the Indians are trying to play with him. You know, they're saying like, well, yeah, but you're not really in the, you know, even average power range for a corner outfielder. So they're probably trying to use that against him, and we'll see what happens. It is worth noting that Paul Hoynes, the Indians beat writer for the Plain Dealer, said a week or two ago that the impression he got from the Indians front office was that they will end up going to a hearing probably this year, which will be the first hearing they've gone to since 1991. And, but that it probably wouldn't be with either Masterson or Brantley. Which is an interesting idea. So that's the arbitration situation. And, of course, you know, in case our listeners don't really know, going to an arbitration hearing is not a fun time. You know,
it's very much like I would imagine going to a divorce meeting with your wife and her divorce attorney is like.
Right, because, you know, if you're Brantley's agent, you're going to go out and say he had this OBP, you know, he strikes out in this, you know, low level per at bat, you know, blah, 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 defense, yada, yada, yada. that's all trying to drive Brantley's value up. So the Indians representatives are going to have to go out and tell them everything they think Michael Brantley does poorly.
Yeah.
And that's not a good way to build a strong rapport with your players.
Yeah. There's a lot of former girlfriends I tried that with, just, you know, straight up honesty.
Yeah.
Let me tell you things you're not good at.
Not to mention,
doesn't work out well.
Right. Not to mention the fact that the hearings are in February, when most of the players have already reported to camp. So it kind of kills the whole hope springs eternal vibe by pointing out all your flaws. So anyway,
I just imagine a baseball player standing in the outfield, thinking to himself like, oh man, I'm really not good at getting to those balls in the gap. They're right.
Well, Greg Swindell and Jerry Brown, those were the last two guys they went to a hearing with in 91. And Swindell won and Brown lost. And Swindell said it was awful. He said it was just an awful experience to have the Indians representatives, you know, stand up and say like, well, he's not very good at this, and frankly, we're not impressed with that. And he could do better here, and he won. So imagine what the other guy felt like.
So imagine the guy who lost.
Because the judge obviously agreed with the Indians on that
guy. And this is the guy who's like, yeah, they're right. You're not very good.
Because I'd have to remember, because honestly, I'm a little out of practice since it's been since 1991. But does the judge... I think he has to choose just between the two numbers, right? He can't like
his own. You side with the club or the player.
Right. You can't choose the middle. It's either one or the other.
Yeah. And they choose my favorite thing is when they started this whole process, they used to choose guys who were not affiliated with baseball at all. So it was just like normal guys off the street. Now, apparently all the guys received like a copy of like the Bill James, you know, like baseball encyclopedia or something, you know, so they have an idea of what these clubs are talking about with their advanced numbers.
Yeah, right.
But so continuing on with the pitching market, what's going on with old Ubaldo Jimenez there? Well, you guys are doing this little mating dance with Ubaldo.
He's still out there. Nobody's claimed him as their dance partner yet.
Cleveland's just circling them like they're interested.
I think it was John Heyman, I think, who said that Ubaldo is possibly all the way down to a 3-year, $39 million deal.
Does it make sense for Ubaldo to take a 3-year, $39 million deal, or is he better like returning to Cleveland for a 1-year deal?
Right.
Or maybe more cash and then trying to hopefully put together a great season and then go for a long-term deal next year when Tanaka's not there just screwing up the market.
Yeah, that's the pillow contract situation is apparently what that's called, the pillow deal. Yeah. And, I mean, the Indians would love that. That would be their dream come true, is if they could convince Ubaldo to come back for 1 year and basically say, you know, well, you can come back here, work with Callaway again. If you have another great year, you know, that money's going to be out there next year. I hope that happens, because that would be that would be a boost to the Indians' rotation, and it would be not very risky, you know?
Right. No bad one-year deals.
Yeah. You know, and you got to look at it this way. The Indians have they've waffled. Like, on one hand, you have Antonetti and Francona saying, like, we're pretty happy with who we have. And then on the other hand, they're rumored to be interested in guys like Scott Baker, you know, which I think Scott Baker signed, didn't he? Maybe that was Jeff Baker. It was Jeff.
Yeah,
Jeff
it wasn't Scott Baker.
Yeah, Jeff Baker. They're rumored to be interested in Scott Baker. You know, they're always connected to Ubaldo. I don't think that they're actually content with what they have. I think they're doing their Michael Bourne dance. We're content with what we have unless we can get a guy on a really nice value deal.
Which isn't a, it's not a bad stance to take for a small market team like that.
No. So when you look at it, okay, so they're not going to sign Ervin Santana because he's going to cost them a draft pick. The only reason they're in on Ubaldo is because he wouldn't cost them a draft pick.
In fact, right, yeah, he comes back free of charge with that draft pick.
You know, they're only one of, like, I think 10 teams because I think, like, it's like 10 teams have their pick protected because they were so poor last year.
Right, yeah.
But they're, you know, the only team other than those that can bring Ubaldo back without losing a draft pick. Now, if Ubaldo, say Ubaldo signs somewhere else, okay, they're not going to sign Santana. They're still going to go after Scott Baker, which I would fully support, you know, especially because there's the rumor that it would probably be a minor league deal. They could still look at Bronson Arroyo. And, of course, as we'll talk about later, well, A.J. Burnett's out there, although they haven't been connected to him at all. He's been connected heavily to the Orioles.
Orioles and Phillies, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you say anything ridiculous like A.J. Burnett's going to Cleveland. We would have to stop being friends if A.J. Burnett went to Cleveland.
We'll get to A.J. Burnett later. Don't worry.
All right, yeah. Carry on.
The thing about Arroyo is that, you know, we're talking how durable he is, you know. He's older, like Burnett. He's probably, you know, going to continue to decline, like Burnett. But he's durable. He's had good, you know, solid seasons time after time and again. The problem I think Arroyo is facing in the market is he probably went into the season or the offseason thinking he was going to get like a 3-year, $30 million deal. And if Ubaldo's going to get a deal like that, Arroyo is probably looking at like 2 years and $18 million.
Right.
I mean, I don't like to get locked up in long contracts, so something that's maybe 2 years and under $20 million sounds great to me. The upshot on Ubaldo, of course, is what if he really did figure it out last year?
Ooh, tantalizing.
Okay, so just imagine this for a second. What if Ubaldo did figure it out, and you can bring him back, say, for 3 and 36, okay? Does that mean that now you can't sign Masterson? Like, is it a logic problem? Like,
that's what you would need to know in Cleveland's front office is, you know, does signing one of these guys inhibit us from being able to, you know, do what we want to do with Masterson, which is apparently trying to figure out how to work out a long-term deal with him.
Right. Now, of course, the flip side is, what if you're Chris Antonetti and you've been having these extension talks with Masterson and you realize it's just not going to happen?
Yeah. Now, yeah, on the flip of that, yeah. Well, at that point, you should probably start looking elsewhere.
Right. And if you could get a guy like Ubaldo, who, again, has ace potential for a below-market deal, is that something you should do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would make sense. If you could get him at that ridiculous basement bargain price.
Right.
As far as free agent pitching goes, oh yeah, $12 million a year for a starting pitcher after this offseason doesn't seem that bad.
Right.
If you can get away with that, you got to be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's a dance that's going to continue. And I think now that Burnett's in the market, Burnett's almost in this, like, Tanaka-like situation where it's
right.
Like nothing's going to happen until Burnett signs because Burnett, since he only wants to pitch 1 year, is the least risky guy, you know? So
right.
Until he signs, then these other teams like the Blue Jays, the Orioles, then they're going to have to figure out, like, okay, do we need to pony up for one of these guys with a draft pick attached to him? Or are we happy with a guy like Bronson Arroyo?
How much do you think Ubaldo doesn't want to go to Toronto?
A lot.
On a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm going to say 8.
What if 1 is the most that he doesn't want to go to Toronto? Would you put him at a 2 on that scale?
Wait, 1 is the most?
Yeah, flip it around the other way.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I just like to see that the other way too.
I don't think he wants to go to Toronto.
And not at all.
I think they have that in their favor, both that he is a very like kind of personal, quiet, you know, guy, And I think he would probably rather stay someplace where he's comfortable. And he'd probably rather stay someplace with a guy that helped him finally get his stuff together. Especially if he thinks he's going to sign for 1 year and then flip that to a big contract. That would be wise.
But, would be advisable, yeah. You wanna be with the guy who straightened out your awful, god-awful mechanics. Yeah. We were talking about that before we recorded, too. There's some really telling GIFs out there of – is it GIFs or GIFs?
I don't know.
I always call it GIFs, I guess.
I always call it a GIF, but I think you're right, actually.
Nah, I don't know. We have these kind of discussions all the time. What are we, probably 50-50 on that? I don't know. I mispronounce a lot of things. Anyways, there's some moving pictures. Now I'm talking like an old-timey from 1910. We're just going to the moving picture to see Ubaldo Jimenez pitching. There are some GIFs or GIFs or however you pronounce them of Ubaldo Jimenez and his mechanics. Was it his first year in Cleveland?
Yes.
Where
you were still coaching.
I mean, it was yeah. So that'd have been his first year in Cleveland. Of just how goofed up his mechanics had gotten from the start of the year until the point where he had just completely not looked like a pitcher at all.
Yeah, he was dropping his pitching arm down behind his butt, almost touching the ball to his heel in some cases.
Oh yeah, it was crazy. Go search out those GIFs. Maybe we'll find them for you and we'll post them online somewhere so you guys can see them. But
yeah.
Anyways, let's stay on point here and get to something a little more pressing with me. Do you have something else you want to add? You sounded like you're gonna say one more point.
I have
one more point. All right, go to your one more point, then we'll get to my pressing issue.
One more point, which was Carlos Santana and third base.
That's my point I wanted you to get to.
We're here. Yeah.
All right, we're already there. Okay. Yeah.
Now, this has been all over the internet. I mean,
crazy. I love it, by the way. Love it.
In my opinion, for what it's worth, is that there have been many incorrect interpretations of that ESPN Deportes piece.
Jason is litigating right now. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Litigate, please.
Now,
we need Chris Bradley here for this. I would love
nothing,
this.
Nothing is decided until late in spring training or opening day. Here's what has been decided regarding Carlos Santana in third base right now. He's progressed from a train wreck to serviceable in winter ball. Okay, that is what has occurred to this point. He was awful, and now he's okay. That's enough, I think, and I agree that it should be enough, that going into spring training, you pencil him in as Lonnie Chisenhall's platoon partner. So basically, he's going to play third base whenever there's a lefty on the mound, which would help Lonnie Chisenhall immensely. Now, could it progress farther that they tell Lonnie Chisenhall to go back and work on his quad A hitting skills? It's possible, but here's the problem with that. I don't think that Santana can be the primary third baseman and the backup catcher at the same time. My reasoning is he's never been a third baseman, so he's going to need extra reps to continue to develop at third base, correct? We agree on that?
Mm-hmm.
He was a below-average catcher with everyday reps at catcher. So if you give him even less, it's going to be even uglier. So until they either sign or acquire a backup catcher, I don't see him as anything other than a platoon mate, which, again, is fine with me. You know, I think that's great to protect Chisenhall against lefties, increase the flexibility, hedge yourself if Lonnie Chisenhall does not turn into anything, okay, which is a possibility. He's a prospect. But right now, this whole idea that Carlos Santana is going to be the everyday third baseman is nonsense.
Do you really consider Lonnie Chisenhall a prospect still?
Well, he hasn't had very many at-bats.
Like, is he going to be on your prospect list this year?
No, he doesn't qualify for rookie status. But my point is, and I'm wasting time waiting for his baseball reference thing to load. Do you know everything there is to know about a guy who's had 682 at bats and is 24 years old.
No, not everything you need to know.
Right.
You're starting to get a pretty good picture, though, by 680 some at bats.
Right, but he's had 200 at bats one season where he batted 255, 150 at bats one season, 268, and 300 at bats one season at 225.
Here's one thing we know at this point, which I feel like we can say somewhat definitively, does not hit well against lefties.
He does, but they've never allowed him to actually hit against lefties. And I know what's happening right now somewhere. Bob Finkbeiner is nodding his head in agreement. Because it's Bob's, like, bane of existence, okay, that everyone says Chisenhall can't hit lefties when in his career, he's had 519 at-bats against right-handers and 129 against left-handers. Not exactly a great sample size.
Yeah.
I'm not...
Wow, that's a lot.
I'm not saying that, you know, I don't believe Chisenhall has a platoon split, but I'm just saying there's not really strong major league numbers to back that up.
Touché. Nicely done, sir.
So anyways, the question... you could ask yourself is self.
You would have to preface yourself with self. Yes.
Should Carlos Santana realistically be more than Lonnie Chisenhall's platoon mate, or should Lonnie get one final shot before he's written off into the history of bad draft choices?
Is Lonnie Chisenhall Matt LaPorta? Do you think he is? Is he AAA All-Star Lonnie Chisenhall? But never major league regular Lonnie Chisenhall.
I don't think he's Matt LaPorta in any case, because I don't think Matt LaPorta ever posted a 268 batting average. I'm probably wrong, because he did have one decent season. Let me look it up. But I think Lonnie Chisenhall, honestly, has already developed more than Matt LaPorta as a hitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt LaPorta never hit 260.
Matt LaPorta had a lot of great seasons in Columbus.
He did, but he never great hit seasons. Higher than 254. He had a career 238 average, over 1,000 at bats. He got 1,000 at bats before they dispensed him. So can't we give Lonnie Hall another 400 at bats?
Give him 400 more. The clock is ticking. We're going to have Lonnie watch this season. All right. Anything else with Cleveland?
No, I think that about does it.
That about wraps her up. Well, let's dig right into Pittsburgh, because I know you've just been licking your chops all podcast for this one.
I'm ready.
Here we go. AJ Burnett.
Yeah.
Has not confirmed that he's coming out of retirement to anyone just yet.
Well.
And general manager Neil Huntington says He cannot comment on that status yet. So as far as we know, AJ Burnett still retired. Now, that being said, there is a lot of hullabaloo, a lot of scuttlebutt. Is that the word, scuttlebutt? Is that, I think that's what I'm going for. A lot of chit chat, a lot of water cooler talk about AJ Burnett coming out of retirement this offseason. And the rumored places that AJ Burnett is in all of this water cooler gossip, the rumored places that he's intending to go are not Pittsburgh. Even though he already said that it's Pittsburgh or retirement. Apparently
I believe he said Pittsburgh or retirement at this time.
You love just throwing that on there, don't you? At this time, yes. That is what he said at this time. And hey. Apparently... this could end up being the case.
Hey,
because
he gave himself an out, all right?
Oh, he did. Apparently a much broader out than I had read into initially. Because I guess when I read that, I would never want to pitch anywhere other than Pittsburgh again for the rest of my life, because this is the greatest city ever. And you read it more like, I might come back later on.
Yeah.
We'll see how I feel.
Now, don't get me wrong, okay? Honestly, my honest opinion is that if a pitcher is even considering retirement, or any athlete is considering retirement for this long, they should probably retire.
Right.
Like, if you know, you should either be all in or all out. But AJ apparently is at least leaning towards coming back, right?
Yeah, that's what's the word on the street right now.
I'm looking at this MLB Trade Rumors article. Orioles all in on Burnett. Rays also interested.
Ooh, the Rays, that's a new one.
Now, so the Pirates did not offer AJ Burnett a qualifying offer.
No qualifying offer. You know why they didn't offer him that qualifying offer? Because they knew he would accept it. And that, to me, that was the point. As soon as they didn't offer him the qualifying offer, I figured, like, well, that's it for AJ Burnett in Pittsburgh.
Now,
and then he came out and he made that very apparently
cryptic.
Yes, that was the word I was looking for. Thank you. That cryptic message, which I did not interpret as cryptic at the time.
Right.
But that was when he came out and made that cryptic message after he didn't get that qualifying offer. So.
So they were not willing to pay him $14.1 million because that was the qualifying offer this year.
Yep. Weren't going to do it.
Don't you think he's worth $14.1 million?
Oh, good Lord, yes. If you're looking at the crazy open market of baseball this offseason, AJ Burnett is worth way more than $14.1 million. But Pittsburgh, being the small market team that they are, they don't care what the market says. They care what they're going to do within their financial structure that they have, which, if anything, if I've learned anything from watching the Pirates and since Bob Nutting has took over, he has a very strict financial plan for which the Pirates have to operate under. Yeah, like AJ Burnett this season finished the year with a 1.7 WAR, which is, you know, decent for a starting pitcher like that. He had a decent year. You know, he's probably up in that 15, 16, $17 million range. Threw 191 innings, struck out 209 batters. I mean, those are some elite strikeout numbers. I think he led, it was either the National League or baseball in K per nine.
Right.
Yeah, it was a pretty ridiculous season for a 36-year-old guy.
But, I mean,
so
okay, so let's look at the Pirates rotation without AJ Burnett. So you got Liriano, Ground Chuck Morton, Cole, and Wandy?
As of right now, yeah. And could you refer to him as Garrett Cole, by the way? We gotta put both of his names on there. He's earned that after this season. Let's Garrett Cole.
Why is he earned that?
Oh, you were that. Were you there? Yeah, you were there.
I called them all by their last names.
Yeah, he's Garrett Cole. Anyways, carry on. Garrett Cole.
Cole.
Hey, come on.
Liriano.
You just pushing my buttons there, Ruggiero.
Orton and Wandy and some choice between Edinson Volquez and Jeff Locke and Compton and
straight out of Compton, which
Kyle McPherson or is he hurt?
He's McPherson went under the knife last year. He had the old TJ, so he's done.
Italian at some point,
right? But which that's the big name that you're waiting for,
right? But Italian's not going to break camp, right?
No, he's going to get the old Garrett Cole treatment.
So Italian is really a replacement for Wandy.
Right, yeah.
Because Wandy has to get a chance because you got $13 million in him.
Right.
So you're gonna let Wandy run and hopefully he'll be healthy, but it's iffy. So I mean, I don't know. You won what, 92 games last year? 94 games last year.
But who's counting?
But you won't pay $14 million for the guy that takes your rotation from makes me nervous to okay, that sounds better.
Hey man, I'm not in charge of the team. If I were in charge of the team, I would have extended that offer to AJ Burnett. Because the thing I don't get is they keep saying like, oh yeah, we have the flexibility to bring him back if he wants to come back. So why didn't you just make him the offer from the start?
Right. No,
I don't know.
I completely agree. I mean, if I were you, I would be frustrated by the situation because it's the most beautiful contract situation for a small market team.
Right, that 1 year deal.
It's just an elite level pitcher that really, really does transform your rotation into something much more formidable for only 1 year of commitment.
Yeah, hey, I wouldn't say I'm frustrated because, again, I repeat this quite a bit. Neil Huntington's done a pretty good job managing players and dollars, and he has some kind of plan, I'm assuming. I don't think it was just like, oh, shit, we forgot we were supposed to offer him a qualifying offer by yesterday. Now we didn't. Oh, well. Like, I think it's more like, we're not going to extend him this offer because we have some kind of financial structure in place. What it is? No idea, but I mean, there's information I'm just, nobody's privy to other than the people who are in that front office. And at some point, I'm assuming they'll explain themselves. And if they don't, then I'll just send them harassing emails until they tell me.
I mean, I would be frustrated. You said had record-setting attendance last year, make it to the second round of the playoffs. What separates you in more ways than any from the Cardinals is the rotation. And they couldn't pony up the $14,000 to bring back AJ Burnett.
Yeah, no, I'm a. You can't dwell on these things, Jason. You gotta move on, man. That's the kind of stuff.
Free pass, man. You're giving them a free pass.
Maybe I'm just mellowing out of my old age.
I'm going to go back to my old horse. I'm going to continue to kick it.
Please.
They gave $21 million to Charlie Morton.
They wouldn't give AJ Burnett 14.
AJ Burnett.
Maybe they just really don't like the guy.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Maybe he's got some kind of personality conflict with somebody.
Don't get me started on $5 million for Edison Volquez.
Don't get me started on that, because that kind of makes me sick.
That's the one I don't get. I mean, Morton, whatever, I don't care. But Edison Volquez, that should be a minor league contract.
Yeah, I have no defense for that. I really don't. You can go look at his numbers and see for yourself. They're not good.
Well, at least I got to admit that.
They're not good, but I don't know. They got some kind of plan. I mean, Volquez is a big change-up guy. I mean, maybe they see something that the numbers don't show, Jason. Maybe that's their master plan. Maybe those how many innings did he throw last year? What was it? 170. He threw 170 innings last year and gave up a league-leading 108 earned runs. And a 1.585 whip and a 5.71. Holy sh! I just made myself sick reading all those. Hang on.
Yep. Maybe they see something.
I need to go get some Prilosec. 5.71 ERA. Jeez. Oh, that was in San Diego and Los Angeles.
Don't worry. You gave him $5 million.
I have a migraine right now. Hang on.
They ought to pony up right now.
Can we talk about something a little more positive?
You know what?
I'm going to go berserk here.
Now it's going to cost more. Because now you got to buy his goodwill back. Because you already peed him off when you didn't give him the qualifying offer. Now it's going to be like $17
million. I have to lie down. Hang on.
For a fact that's probably what the Orioles are offering him.
I hope Edinson Volquez wins the Cy Young this year, by the way.
I hope he does, too.
It'd probably be after we traded him to St. Louis.
Yeah.
For Pete Cosma.
You just gotta pray that he's going to come out the other side of that Ray Searidge car wash a new man.
That's right, yeah. Maybe we bought a bionic arm for him.
Maybe.
Listen, enough of this Debbie Downer stuff getting my blood pressure all up. You've been a real negative Nancy today, Jason. And I'm going to tell you something. Something that you may not have known before today. Major League Baseball released their top 100 prospects list.
Yeah.
6 Pittsburgh Pirates are on that top 100 prospect list, led by Gregory Polanco, who was the 3rd outfielder, 12th overall prospect, and Austin Meadows, our prep outfielder, who was the 9th overall outfielder on that list and 45th overall prospect. There was also Jameson Taillon, Tyler Glasnow, Alan Hansen, and Josh Bell, who made an appearance on that list as well. So, if nothing else, after this whole Edison Volquez deal is done with, at least we have that to look forward to.
You do. You do have that to look forward to.
Although I have to say, I went back and I looked at Keith Law. So they, you know, Keith Law released his top 100 prospects, which I think sometimes Keith Law is like that hipster baseball analyst who's like, ew, I don't want my prospect list to look like everybody else's. And just like shuffles guys around just to be like, so I'm Keith Law. But I went back and looked at his like top prospects for like going back to like 2008. And it really, really frightens you how many prospects just don't make it. All right. When you're getting all excited about your prospects, you're like, oh, look at my shiny new toy, ranked number 3 overall on this prospect list. And like you look at how many guys in the top 3 have fizzled out since 2008, it's scary.
Oh, it's scary, man.
It's scary. So I guess the moral of that story is the more guys you have on that list, the better, I suppose. But it lends some perspective to what it takes to go into being a successful Major League Baseball player. How many of those guys just flame out?
Yeah, there's a few along the way.
Yeah, a few, a handful.
You don't want me to read the list of failed Indians prospects.
Well, you guys, I didn't actually look at Major League Baseball's list because I just looked at the article that had the Pirates prospects linked in there. But, you know, Francisco Lindor's got to be in the top 10 prospects somewhere. Let me see if I can pull that list up here. I don't know if they have it linked in this article or not.
I believe the Indians had 3 prospects on that list. It was Lindor, Frazier, and Bauer.
Lindor, Frazier, Bauer. So, yep, okay, yep, here we go. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it lends some perspective to the volatility of prospects and how scary it can be banking on someone like that needing to make it for your team to be successful.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, like I said, the more that you have on that list, the better. So the fact that there's, you know, 6 Pirates on there, that's good. I mean, we talked about this during the trade deadline too. If nothing else, as long as those guys continue to perform at the minor league level, they're still assets.
Right.
So, you know, if it gets to that point in the season where you need an arm or you need a bat in order to put yourself in a position to succeed in the playoffs, well, hey, we got the tools that we can go get whatever we want. You know, that's kind of reassuring as well, I guess. But yeah, that was pretty much it for Pittsburgh. I didn't have a whole lot other than I just wanted to let you, I guess, berate me about AJ Burnett and now give me this sick feeling in my stomach that I've had since we talked about Edinson Volquez.
Yep. Good old Edinson Volquez.
You've really struck a chord with me. I'm just wandering around my apartment now, just lost.
I have a feeling that's what the Pirates were doing when they offered him that contract too.
I felt really good and upbeat at the beginning of this podcast, and right now I'm questioning everything in my life. Why did we spend $5 million on Edinson Volquez? I don't understand.
I don't understand it either.
These were questions that I wasn't asking myself just an hour ago that you've now made me. You've made me look deep within my soul.
Mission accomplished.
And wonder why. Jeez, what a world. Anything else that we need to hit on that we haven't got to?
No, I think that about does it.
Yeah, pretty quiet. keep an eye on the website. We're always releasing great content on there. Jason's been posting articles like crazy. He's keeping up with the noise on the North Coast.
Every month?
Every Monday. Make sure you're checking out the noise on the North Coast. With graduate school starting, I am slacking a little bit. I won't say a whole lot because I've been working on all of our top 20 prospects coming up, as well as putting together our preseason predictions again. So keep your eyes peeled for those. Those will be coming out once we start getting a little closer to the season. I think last year, probably March or so, was when we released those. So
yeah.
Keep your eyes peeled for our top 20 prospects. Maybe we'll release some teasers for you to whet your appetites.
Whet.
And again, our predictions will be out there. So we look forward to you guys chiming in and giving us some of your zany off-the-wall predictions as well. Anything else that we're releasing coming up, Jason, on the website?
Not off the top of my head, although I will say, you know, that probably by the next time we have a podcast, spring training will have started.
Oh, yeah. Pitchers catchers report. What is it? 6 days from today?
Well, it depends. The Indians, I think, are February 11th.
Yeah.
I don't know when the Pirates are, but
it starts today
would be the 13th. Yeah. So
everybody's pitchers and catchers will start reporting within the next few weeks. So. That's going to be really exciting. That gives my life meaning again. Yahoo Fantasy Baseball opened today too. Speaking of things that give my life meaning. So, I'm rip roaring and ready to go. Yeah, I think that's about it. Nothing else to really add there. So guess that means that it's time for us to, wrap it up and let everybody know that if you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. If you want to email us, give us an email at tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb and check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.